Hello, I'm Samantha Sear, and this is the Rooted by Nature podcast. I'm an artist and stay-at-home mum, and in this podcast, I'll be talking about how I connect with nature and the changing seasons, share recipes and creative ideas. I'll take you along on my journey as I learn about the trees, plants and wildlife around me, and the folklore, magic and mythology surrounding them. It's my hope that this uplifting podcast may encourage you to slow down, enjoy the little things, notice the beauty outside your front door, and feel more rooted by nature. October, I love you. You may be my favourite month. I am now knee-deep in pumpkins, drinking pumpkin spice tea, getting all excited about Halloween, and enjoying cosy nights at home. My living room lit by fairy lights and candlelight, tucked up under a blanket and watching my favourite autumnal films. There is something special about marking this time of the year, and for some, it is in fact the end of one year and the beginning of the next. Speaking of which, this Halloween is a special anniversary for me, as I've been doing this podcast for a whole year now. The time has flown by, and it's been quite a journey, but I love it just as much as I did when I sat down to write that first episode. It's my favourite part of the week, the stolen hours I spend researching and writing. Sometimes I can get a little bit carried away. I promise myself an early night, but my fingers are flying across the keys, my candles burn low, the house is so quiet, and I realise that it's almost midnight. And suddenly, everything around me seems a little different. Just a bit magical. And of course, why wouldn't it? After all, it is the witching hour. And this, my friends, is what I want to talk about. It's All Hallows Eve, the veil between worlds is thin, so let's take a peek and dip our toes into the wondrous world of witchcraft. I will let you in to a little secret. I have been drawn to all things witchy, magical and supernatural for as long as I can remember. My bookcase is crammed with books covering witchcraft, natural magic, Wicca, spellcasting, divination like tarot, pendulums, runes, palm reading, tea leaf reading, astrology, crystals, weather magic, pagan rituals, druid groves, fairy magic, the other world, history of the occult and mystery schools, herbal magic, the history of magic, witch trials, covens, sabbats and esbats, moon worship and Celtic deities, all sorts, and I love it all. So you may be wondering, am I a witch? The answer, with some thought, is no. I find labels rather limiting, so why limit myself to witchcraft when I am equally fascinated by mediums and psychics, shamans, druids, pagans, Celts, and numerous gods and goddesses from around the world? But I suppose, at a push, my oldest and truest passion has and will always be the craft. So, this is going to be a bit of a one-off special episode. It's going to be a little different to my usual episodes, and this is just going to focus on witchcraft. I mean, it is Halloween. So, I am going to cover the basics of witchcraft, how to work your own magic, how casting spells can be as simple as carrying an acorn or waving a wand from a tree chosen specifically for its magical properties, what you can forage for magical uses, how to channel the elements and all of nature's gifts to protect, heal, and help yourself. If you're not witchy by nature, don't turn off the podcast just yet. You may find that you're inspired to use a little of your own magic, even if you don't call it that. I hope this episode, regardless of your magical inclinations, leaves you feeling uplifted and connected to nature and the people around you. I'd like to thank the lovely listener who left me a review on Apple Podcasts entitled Seasonal Inspiration. It was a beautiful review, and I'm glad I've helped you understand your wife's learning of witchcraft. So this episode, my friend, is for you. Before we jump in, let's cover a few witchy basics for anyone new to the off-screen world of witchcraft. Firstly, if you see the word magic with a K on the end, then it's magic of the witchy kind. Not everyone will use the K, but sometimes it's helpful so as not to be confused with pulling rabbits out of hats. Secondly, witchcraft is typically referred to as the craft, and in its simplest form, it's a practice that taps into natural magic to achieve desired results. The source of this magic is really whatever you believe created us and our universe. And the craft can take many forms and look different for everybody. You could be a kitchen witch, hedge witch, green witch, the list goes on and on, but they're all pretty self-explanatory. Someone who dabbles in a bit of everything is known as an eclectic witch, and if he or she prefers to do it alone, then they're a solitary eclectic witch. You can also be a white witch, and although this is a complicated topic, this is a generic name for someone who will only practice magic with good intentions and doesn't partake in hexing and cursing. If you're Wiccan, then theoretically you would abide by the Wiccan Reed, which respects the free will of others, and the crux of which states, do what you like as long as you don't harm anyone in the process. Wicca is a nature-based belief system, inclusive of men and women, and typically honours both a god and a goddess, although some Wiccans may be atheist, honour a particular pantheon, or draw on multicultural influences. The foundations of Wicca are based on pagan traditions that root from the UK, but it really took off in America and is now a very popular topic. I am deliberately skirting around the details here because the history of Wicca is convoluted and fascinating, and I don't want this to become a spoken essay on the topic. So simply type the word into Google or YouTube and you will get thousands of results. It's worth noting that you do not need to be Wiccan to be a witch. Anyone can practice the craft from anywhere belonging to any faith. And practicing magic can be as small as stirring your morning coffee thrice clockwise and making a wish for the day. Or it could be dancing naked under the full moon with your coven on the solstice and making offerings to the goddess. It's really a personal thing. One last thing that I feel I ought to cover before getting into all the fun stuff is the devil. Yes, well, it is the Halloween episode, and you can't think about witches without thinking about black magic, so let's get into this for a second, shall we? There's a real difference of opinion on this one. Some say the devil plays no part in the craft because he belongs to Christianity and thereby has no part in a separate belief system. Others say the devil was associated with the craft when the church was converting pagans to Christianity and took advantage of making connections between the devil and Celtic gods like Pan, who has horns and hooved feet. Others call devil worship Satanism, and that's a whole different thing. And then there are witches that do dabble in the dark arts, and this is where it can all get a little bit dodgy. It's worth pointing out here that there is a difference between working with spirits and summoning demons. Technically, there's no such thing as white and black magic, but it comes down to the person wielding the power. If you think of magic like electricity, it can keep you warm and light your home, but it can also electrocute you. If you wanted to learn more, then there are plenty of books on the topic, but I highly recommend learning how to protect yourself first before you go summoning demons and trying to get one to do your bidding. Personally, I am not well versed in black magic. It's not a topic I've spent much time researching. If I were at Hogwarts, I would be in the potions lab or the greenhouse learning how to safely pull up mandrake roots. So for those of you completely new to the world of witchcraft and now potentially a bit freaked out, look at it this way. If you have a witchy friend who likes to make you homemade gifts and reads your tarot and likes to cast a spell to help you find a missing earring, then you're fine. If you think a witchy friend is summoning demons in their bedroom, they offer to hex your boss every time they annoy you, and you find strange things keep happening to you if you forget their birthday, then I would suggest maybe keeping your distance. I'm joking, mainly. But keep listening. And when I go into how to cast spells, I'll give you some tips on how to break a hex if you're actually worried about such things. So getting back to the lighter topic of screaming mandrake roots that look like wrinkly old men, if, like me, you're interested in the real history behind magical artifacts, the book published off the back of the British Library's amazing exhibition, Harry Potter, The History of Magic, is a fantastic read with beautiful photographs and illustrations. I think out of all the things that I got to see, the 3,000-year-old cauldron found in the River Thames is my favourite. Because it's still in such pristine condition, the theory is that rather than it being dumped, it was more likely to be an offering, gifted to a god or goddess of the river. And it's easy to forget just how ancient the Thames is. It's been flowing for millions of years, long before humans settled around it. And these human settlers have all revered the river. And many of the votive offerings found date right back to the Neolithic. Just the word Thames is one of the oldest names in Britain, and although it's changed slightly over time because it's been spoken in different tongues, what's rare is that it has always kept the sound Tem. And this is the sacred element, the part that means dark, and in this context, holy. One of the pervading gods of the river, which we still know and venerate today, is Old Father Thames, and you can find representations of this god all over London. There's a fascinating book called Thames, Sacred River by Peter Ackroyd, one of my favourite historical writers, and I love the fact that no matter how you look at the Thames, whether it's through a spiritual or a secular lens, the river has its own life force. In the words of Peter Ackroyd, the surface of the water has such a complex wave structure that it seems to function as the membrane of a living organism. Like the ear, its capillary structure, stirred by movement, communicates its changes to the whole. It has been so intimately concerned with human destiny, replete with desires and fears, that it has acquired a human personality. Sorry, I get excited, especially about London, and I've gone completely off track, so let's get back. Cauldrons. There is another cauldron in the Harry Potter exhibition book, which is even more interesting, in the sense that it exploded. Whether you are a believer in magic or not, how does something as sturdy as a cauldron come to be coated in thick black tar, smoke to an uncontrollable extent, and explode just because some Cornish witches were gathered around it on a beach, concocting a potion to invoke a spirit? It's not like they were cooking up dynamite. It's the magic, I tell you, and this, my friends, is why you don't dabble in the dark arts unless you have a sound idea of what you're doing. Another item in the exhibition that was impossible to miss was a 6-metre-long scroll that took up an entire room. It's called the Ripley Scroll, and it's an alchemical treatise on how to create the elixir of life. Now, many people think of the point of alchemy being to find the philosopher's stone and turn base metals into gold. And as desirable as this wealth would be, the more esoteric goal was spiritual enlightenment and immortality. Obviously, I couldn't understand any of it, as it's a complicated series of images like a red and green lion sat either side of a fire and a serpent biting its own tail, bleeding into what looks like a golden snitch. And it's designed to be mysterious because the use of images instead of words meant alchemists could communicate in a cryptic language of symbols and metaphor. Something I knew absolutely nothing about but became fascinated by after reading the All Souls trilogy by Deborah Harkness. Now, I know I have recommended these books before, but it's because I love them so much. And I only learned of them after watching the TV adaptation entitled The Discovery of Witches. So, of course, I was stood there at the exhibition studying the scroll, pretending to be Diana, the protagonist, translating the images into meanings and looking for the alchemical child. A side note here that ties in really well is that Peter Ackroyd has written a novel called The House of Dr. D, who was a prominent 16th century alchemist and a character in the All Souls trilogy, so I am really looking forward to reading this. For any All Souls fans listening, I'm going to completely geek out here and say that I have been blessed to visit Oxford, to take a tour of the university, and to stand in the Bodleian Library. My excitement at which was practically palpable. I don't think most people get such a kick out of being in an old library. And to top it off, I took my sandwich to Blackwell's bookshop across the road and I sat reading in their cafe looking out across the university. And anyone having read the books will know I was in my element walking in Diana's footsteps. And just a side note here, if you're an advocate of independent bookshops, like I am, then Blackwell's take orders online and the shipping in the UK is free. I also visited the Ashmolean Museum, the Botanical Gardens, I had a drink in a tiny pub down a cobbled street, and browsed the market where Diana shopped for ingredients to make dinner for a vampire, and I took a walk along the river. Heaven. I know this sounds odd, but my idea of a perfect long weekend would be in Oxford. I've never felt so in love with a place. It began when I was a child reading Philip Pullman's Northern Lights, but I have gone completely off topic again. So let's get back to some real magic. The core belief when it comes to any kind of witchcraft, unless you are into summoning spirits, is that the real magic comes from you. Any tool, ingredient, or natural items you use are simply to enhance and complement that magic. The power is in you. You were born with it. As a child of the cosmos, whatever power you associate with gods or goddesses, the land or the stars, is naturally a part of you. And it's your birthright to tap into it. Everyone is different. Some need to channel this energy in different ways. You can call it energy, chi, magic, power, belief, faith, whatever sits well with you. There is no right or wrong here, simply the desire to change something and have a hand in it. So let's cover some witchy basics. And as it's Halloween, feel free to listen to this podcast at night by candlelight with a pointy black hat on and a broomstick to hand, preferably followed by hot chocolate and a double bill of your favourite witchy films. Personally, I have never felt the need to be prescriptive about the craft, as I'm happy to just walk into the woods or my garden if I'm feeling lazy and use anything that feels right and comes to hand. But if you want to be all formal about it, here's the basic toolkit. An altar. This is a designated space you can use to focus your intentions and work some magic. Think crystals, candles, statuettes, photos, incense, all laid out on a silk cloth. The closest I have come to this is a bookshelf, covered in crystals, conkers, acorns, feathers and leaves, but that is just me. The four elements is important to most witches and it's easy to represent in an altar space by arranging a dish of salt to face north, representing earth, a feather to represent air in the east, a glass of water in the west and a candle or incense stick in the south. However, if you're like me, and you shy away from anything that feels remotely religious, but want to feel connected to the elements, you can just as easily stand outside on the earth, facing the sun, listening to the wind, and drinking a glass of water. Just ground and making a connection can be as simple or ceremonial as you would like it to be. Now, some witches may recoil at such rebellion, but in my opinion, it's all about intention and where your head's at. You can be stood at an elaborate altar cloaked in velvet with all the right items in front of you, chanting a long and complicated spell. But if you're not really feeling the words and having to read them because there's too many to remember, and you're thinking about whether all the candle smoke and incense is going to set the smoke alarm off and trying to push tomorrow's shopping list out of your head, then it doesn't matter how much you've spent on it all. You may as well be casting a spell using a shopping list. But if you're outside, grounding yourself, feeling in tune with nature and fully focused on what it is that you desire and feeling grateful for being here in the first place, then any spell you cast will be much more potent because you're directing all your energy into it. Speaking of spell casting outside, especially at night, it's worth looking up and taking note of the moon phase. As a general rule of thumb, it's best to align things that you want with a waxing moon and what you don't want with a waning moon. So if you're wishing for an increase in abundance, money, creativity, new beginnings, love, friendship, or healing, then it makes sense to do so when the moon is growing. When the moon is decreasing, focus on letting go, protection, banishment, and cutting ties, or cord cutting if that's the kind of spell you're doing. A full moon is when the moon's influence is at its strongest, so it's good for any of the above. And when a new moon is hidden from our sight, it's best to just rest and leave the magic for another day. Although, when it comes to anything time sensitive, like protection, for instance, I agree with Scott Cunningham's approach, which is do it whenever is needed, regardless of moon phases or correlations. There's no use in waiting if it's urgent. And there are so many correlations: days of the week, candle colours, incense blends, herbs, day or night, the list goes on. But essentially, do what feels right when it feels right. I am a believer that magic is at its strongest when your intentions are at their strongest. And so it's best to work magic when something is actually needed, rather than doing it on the daily for the sake of it. There are plenty of ways to work a little magic into the mundane without needing to cast spells. This can be as simple and discreet as drinking a herbal tea so as to consume the magical properties of that herb to help you with your day, or include ingredients in cooking. So for instance, if you're going to throw a bay leaf into your soup or stew, hold the leaf for a moment and think of the tree it came from. Ask the leaf to impart its protective qualities into your food and keep safe those who are soon to enjoy it. If you need to amp up that protection, then do the same with a cinnamon stick, which will speed up the results, and perhaps a slice of ginger to give it some power. When it comes to kitchen witchery, the options are limitless. We tend to take for granted that the whole foods we eat are products of nature and thereby carry with them not only their nutritional value, but their medicinal and their magical qualities too. And if cooking isn't your thing, as I've mentioned in previous episodes, you can do the same with incense too. Choose the flowers, herbs, and spices for their powers and be selective so that they complement each other. 3 is generally a good rule of thumb. And if incense isn't convenient, then a candle blended with some essential oils will do the same thing. The important thing is to focus, ground, and make your intentions and wishes clear when lighting it. Candles are another basic tool in the kit. It's a safe and easy way to represent the element of fire, and spells can be written down and burned to release their magic into the world. And to be honest, candlelight is so often used because it's great for creating atmosphere. As magic is all about channeling your own energy and intentions, then anything that gets you in the right frame of mind can only be a good thing. Colours can contribute to the powers you're seeking to use, like red for love, green or gold for money, yellow for luck, blue for healing, and silver for spiritual connection. The main thing is to use your own intuition. Personally, I tend to disagree with prescribed colour associations and just go with what makes sense to me. So, for instance, if you were considering candle magic to work a fertility spell, you could use a silver candle. In alchemy, silver represents the moon. The moon strongly influences a woman's menstrual cycle, and most women have a regular cycle that often ties in with the moon phases. So, for instance, you may bleed during the new moon and ovulate on the full moon. In this particular case, you could light your candle on the night of the full moon and recite your spell or inscribe the candle with your wish. You could also write it down and use the candle to burn it. A nice way to do this is to write your wish on a piece of papery bark fallen from a silver birch tree. The silver birch is often associated with the goddess, the moon, fertility, and new beginnings. Babies' cradles used to be made from birchwood. If you're using a little spell candle, then let it burn out to complete the spell. You could also cleanse a moonstone crystal, charge it up in the moonlight and have it with you while you complete this spell. So then you carry it with you afterwards as a reminder of the spell and connection to the magic. However, as we're talking about a fertility spell here, I do not need to state that there should be quite a lot of romantic effort on your part too during this moon phase. We are talking about a bit of magical help here, not an immaculate birth. As I said, there are many books out there prescribing correlations, but as colour associations are so subjective, just go with what's right for you. You could also anoint them in essential oils so the herbs lend their powers too, or engrave them with sigils, runes, or words to focus the magic on a particular desire. If that's too fiddly, I promise you the powers that be are not going to frown upon the cheeky use of a marker pen. There's also some practical considerations with candles. In candle magic, many spells will specify that the candle must burn out entirely for the spell to work and not to be used for any other purpose. But if you've lit a big candle, then it's not going to be safe to leave it unattended for hours on end to burn down, especially if it's at night and you need to go to bed. Plus, we're all aware of candle safety, but we're human and it's easy to forget. Last Halloween, I lit a beeswax candle to celebrate the new witchy year, and then I went for a walk with my toddler, completely forgetting about it. I was so deeply grateful to find the house still standing when I got back. This is why you can buy spell candles, which range in colour and are only little, so they burn down quickly. However, if you don't want to splash out because they can be pricey, then I can't see why a birthday cake candle can't be just as good. And it's worth bearing this in mind if you've got witchy interests. The current abundance of Instagrammable witchy goodies are gorgeous. And if it's the aesthetics you're going for, then great. But if it's the desire to work magic that interests you, then the power does not come from the expense of the item. It comes from you and your connection to nature. Wearing a pricey crystal pendant to protect yourself or heal or anything like that is pretty, but an acorn in your pocket is just as good and carries the protection, wisdom, and longevity of the oak tree with it. And if you found it, then you can ask for this protection and thank the tree that gave it to you. I have also been known to wear acorns around my neck, but I appreciate that this isn't normal for everyone. Now, there are witches that lean towards the more kind of magic in the mundane, kitchen witchery, kind of green witchery, herbal stuff, where it's a little bit throughout the day. And then there are other witches that predominantly get their kicks from spell casting. So if this is what tickles your fancy, then I highly recommend grounding yourself first and casting a circle so that you can protect yourself before you drum up a lot of energy. Also, a good tip is to have a chocolate biscuit to hand afterwards, because channeling energy can be quite draining, and a cup of tea and a chucky bicky can stave off a headache and nudge your energy back up. Casting a circle is simple and will protect you from any unwanted energy or entities interfering, and will help you contain the energy you've gathered in order to channel it. In the same way that I mentioned the moon, it's a good idea to cast a circle clockwise, or diesel as it's called, when invoking or looking to create or increase, and anti-clockwise, widdershins, if you're banishing something or someone. Like you're doing or undoing a screw. Again, this can be as simple or ceremonial as you like. You can use a wand and envision a golden light sparkling from the tip and leaving a trail as you turn, like the trail of a sparkler. Or you can use your finger. Or if you prefer a more substantial, visible reminder, you could encircle yourself in crystals like quartz, which will not only protect but help magnify the energy invoked. If you're thinking of Hocus Pocus, the film here, and the search for salt, then yes, you can certainly use salt too, which adds purifying and potent protection qualities. But think about the subsequent hoovering. And please avoid this if you're outside, because salt is surprisingly harmful to flora and fauna. If you are casting a circle outside and there isn't a wind, then flower petals, leaves, fallen twigs, conkers, acorns, and anything else you can find are all nature-friendly alternatives if you wanted that kind of visible circle. Although I would recommend ensuring that you're definitely alone and not likely to be interrupted. You do not want to be on a public footpath and have an innocent dog walker just break into your circle. Also, if you were into altars, as I've mentioned, you can also bring a travel altar with you, like a bottle of water and a little bag containing a scrap of fabric, a crystal for earth, a tea light for fire, a feather for air, and a drop of water held in the lid of your bottle. And you can lay this out in the middle of your circle. As most smartphones have a built-in compass these days, or at least an app that you can download, when you're laying your altar out, you would be able to see the directions as well when placing your items. Now, obviously, casting with your finger is more discreet, but you could simply pick up a twig. And every twig, depending on the tree it fell from, will have different qualities to lend to your spell. Feel free to imagine yourself in Ollivander's wand shop, picking out the wood best aligned with your personality. And although your forage twigs won't be ornately carved and have phoenix feathers inside them, there is nothing to say that you can't dress them up yourself. And apologies for the number of Harry Potter references in this episode. It's Halloween. I can get away with it. There's something very satisfying in making something mundane into something unique with your own touch of magic. You could wrap the handle of the twig in thick silky thread or ribbon in a colour corresponding to its intended use. You could scrape off the outer bark and draw on runes or symbols. You could bind or glue small crystals to it or top it with a feather to give it a colourful tip. It's really down to your own imagination. And look, if this is too far-fetched for you muggles out there, then this is a great thing to do with kids. Let them have some fun and create their own magic. Now, for the Potter fans listening, you will know that Harry goes in search of an Elder Wand, one of the three Deathly Hallows, which, when reunited, bring the owner mastery over death. And that is not a coincidence from a narrative point of view, because Elder is a tree of death, rebirth, and reincarnation. And J.K. Rowling's choice of wand is specific for other characters too. Harry was given Holly, a wood that represents hope and protects against lightning, poison, and drives away evil spirits. I do not need to make the connection here between the lightning and the skull. Conversely, Voldemort, the character that poses this threat to Harry, has a yew wand, and the yew tree symbolises death, as every part of the yew tree, including the sap, is highly poisonous. It grows alone and represents rebirth and immortality due to its ability to stand for over 1,000 years, and it's the tree of life in Norse mythology. Harry's wand also correlates to the tree associated with his birth month listed in the Ogham, as does Ron's ash wand and Hermione's vinewood wand. Now, I was going to explain that the Ogham is an ancient tree language and then delve into the Celtic tree calendar and each tree's magical associations, but I have decided to keep you waiting and save this for the next episode. I know, how cheeky am I? When I started researching each tree, I began having far too much fun, and then I found myself buying tree oracle cards and then making my own Ogham runes, and it was an adventure all on its own and far too much to squeeze in here. This episode is already so much longer than I had planned, so I'm going to keep this Halloween special witchy, and when the leaves are turning in November, you will have a tree magic episode to look forward to. So where were we? Wands, if this is all a bit much for you, and to be honest, it's rare that I ever find myself prancing around with a wand, as fun as it may be, there are more discreet ways to work a little magic. If, like me, you find yourself picking up all sorts of natural curiosities while you're out at this time of year, then why not give them a purpose? For instance, hazelnuts usually grow in little clusters of 2 or 3, but I found a perfect star the other day. 5 whole golden brown hazelnuts grouped into a star shape that lay flat on my hand like a natural pentacle, each nut pointing to one of the elements. The 5th is spirit, if you were wondering, and it just seemed really special. So it now lives on my bookshelf and protects my home. You can charm anything you find by holding it in your hands and enchanting it. By this, I mean you can simply ask the object to attract something or protect you from something, tapping into the natural magic this item already holds, or feel free to be much more elaborate. If it's a natural item like a pebble or fossil, then it already carries Mother Nature's magic, but if it's man-made, processed, or changed hands in some way, like a crystal, some jewellery, or perhaps even something found in an antique shop, then cleanse it first. You can do this in many ways. Choose the best method suited to the item. So, for instance, you could pass it through incense smoke, wash it under running water, bury it in the earth, or like sink it in salt for a few days. Or, if it's fragile or absorbent, you could use sound vibration instead. The word charm can be used to describe both a talisman and an amulet. But they are, in fact, very different. A talisman attracts and an amulet repels and protects. A quick fact, because I think it's lovely. The name amuletum was used for both cyclamens and amber. Cyclamens planted outside the home for protection and amber worn to protect from negative influences and infection. Amber is still associated with healing to this day. You'll see many a teething baby wearing an amber bead bracelet, and I myself wore an amber pendant after childbirth to help my body heal after an infection put me in hospital. You can also make a charm bag to work a particular spell. I bought a bunch of reusable tea bags because they were handy little drawstring bags made from natural biodegradable cloth and the perfect size. And thinking about it, I've used more of them for spells than I have for tea. They also work well in the bath. if you're using one for the bath, just fill it up with Epsom salts, herbs, or even oats if you need to soothe your skin and tie it up tight. In fact, this is a great way to use oats in the bath so you don't end up clogging up your plug hole with porridge. And then you can dispose of it afterwards or compost it if possible. You can use a spell bag for anything. I hung one over each bed before I went on holiday to protect my husband and son while I was away and to help them sleep. Many times I took one to work, carried one in my pocket to help me mediate difficult meetings. I hid one in my desk to protect me from negative vibes emanating from stressed out co-workers, and always had crystals on my desk to help protect my own good energy. You can also use one to make something happen if you're looking to attract something. You can fill a spell bag with anything, ideally natural ingredients, and you want them to complement each other to enhance the spell. You don't want too many ingredients fighting for the spotlight. Here are some ideas. Apple pips for fertility, acorns for luck, crystals for cleansing and empowerment, salt for purification, earth for grounding, leaves that bring with them the magic of their particular tree, orange peel for happiness, bay for protection. There is a recipe for a protection spell bag in The Green Witch book by Aaron Murphy Hiscock, which calls for iron nails, needles, and pins, so feel free to get creative. Be aware if you're using ingredients that are likely to rot or smell, then it's best to use it for the short term and put it in the compost and respectfully dispose of the rest. You can also give them to loved ones, like an enchanted lavender pillow bag. But a more attractive and mysterious option would be a witch bottle. Now, this is essentially the same thing, but a more long-term option as you're enclosing the ingredients in glass, which can be helpful if the contents can be easily crushed, like flower petals, or likely to smell when they rot. You can use them to protect your home or give them as gifts to bring the recipient good luck, fertility, protection, anything that you intend, really. This might sound odd, but original witch bottles used to hold a few drops of urine, either from the person it was meant to be protecting or the person casting the spell. Ironically, they were designed to protect the home from witches and have been found all over the country, up chimneys, in the foundation of houses, and even in the Thames. I can't say I have ever felt the need to include wee, hair, or nail clippings in a spell bottle, but each to their own. Now, while we're on the topic of enchanting things, I can't do a witchcraft episode and leave out poppets and curses. Poppet is the traditional English name for what you'd think of as a voodoo doll. It's made into a shape that represents a particular person. It can be moulded from wax or clay, sewn into a doll and include hair, blood and nail clippings. These days you could more simply stick a little photo of the person's face to it. It's best known for harmful magic, and sticking pins into various places is believed to cause pain to the doomed person in question, but it can also be used for healing and to connect a person to a spell. Stuffed with herbs, spices, roots, and crystals to enhance the positive energy directed towards that person. So, you know, do think about that when you think of poppets. They don't all have to be bad. When it comes to aggressive magic, as we're on the topic, it is possible to shield yourself from such attacks, be it psychic or magical. Many practitioners will wear crystal jewellery to protect themselves, like jet, black obsidian, hematite, and black tourmaline. You can also enchant jewellery to enhance the crystal's protective qualities. If you really believe you have been hexed, then first I would suggest not underestimating the power of suggestion. It's amazing how quickly someone can succumb to negative thinking and attract bad luck when they genuinely believe it's coming their way. But there are so many simple ways to deflect and break a hex. Like leaves or flowers from an elder tree floating in your bath can break a curse. And other ingredients that you can use in spell work include comfrey, thistle, burdock root, garlic, and salt. A great way to deflect negative energy is to return it to sender, which is a good all-rounder if you think someone is sending you bad vibes rather than just all-out cursing you. Mirrors are useful for this. You can make it as simple or as elaborate as you like. If you know who's giving you the heebie-jeebies, then just placing a photo of them in front of a mirror can work, like literally bouncing the energy back to them. I recommend cleaning and consecrating the mirror first, and then make it clear what you want the mirror to do. Magic is all about intention. Now, this is not a new idea. Magic mirrors appear in fairy tales and folklore from all over the world for a good reason. Enchanting a mirror or using it for scrying is an old and well-practiced technique. Now, I used to think scrying meant holding a crystal pendulum over a map and casting a locator spell, because this seemed to happen in like every other episode of Charmed that I used to watch on TV. But in fact, that's kind of a mix-up of things. So to break that down, holding a pendulum and watching it swing is a form of divination. It's so simple and fun to do, and it's great to pull out at a dinner party if conversation dries up. You would be amazed how many people who claim not to believe or be interested in magic are suddenly all in when someone is there doing something in front of them. Whether it's tarot cards or a pendulum or palm reading or tea leaf reading, curiosity, that happens to all of us. We're all curious. So, you know, just let go. Let yourself believe a little bit. So pendulums, if you're interested, this is what you do. All it is a crystal or weighted object with a downward point attached to the end of a chain or length of string. Hold it very still between your thumb and your finger, because you don't want to deliberately move it. You just want to hold it still. And then ask a question. And once you've asked a question, it will gently start to swing. So determine what a yes and a no is for you, because that's really important and it's different for everybody. So ask an obvious question. Like, for instance, I always start with, is my name Samantha? Then ask a no question, and it should swing the other way. So for me, I get a clockwise swing for yes and an anti-clockwise swing for no. It stops still if it can't answer, and then tends to swing from side to side if it's prompting me to reframe my question. Now, I know you're thinking, what causes the pendulum to swing? Well, I think it's down to your beliefs. Is it your subconscious mind, your guardian angel, a spirit? The divine, my guess is as good as yours, but I can promise you it works. You don't need to buy an expensive pendulum. And I've heard that even just star anise works well, but I haven't tried it, although you know I'm going to try this with an acorn. So getting back to Charmed, and I said that they've kind of mixed things up. So the pendulum over the map, that's the yes-no question. But the word scrying actually means to see visions with your third eye. And that's usually using a reflective surface. So a mirror or a black mirror is ideal if you happen to have one. Crystal balls and water. Doing this in the dark by candlelight is even better. Now, I'm fascinated by divination, but there are so many forms. I literally have an encyclopedia on the topic, so I can't possibly cover them all in this episode. So I'm just going to leave the fortune telling there, and I'm going to move on to something called glamour magic. Before you get excited, I am not talking about the kind of scene in The Craft where one character goes from brunette and pasty to tanned and blonde in one flick of her hands. I am talking about the simple act of enchanting your makeup, jewellery, or an outfit. It's incredible what the power of suggestion can do. Believe that you will magically appear more attractive, confident, and sophisticated, and you will, if these are the qualities you're going for. Confidence is all in the mind, but it shines out of us like an aura. And if you can use magic to influence your mindset, it will influence how you project and ultimately the way you're perceived by others. You can put on a layer of confidence and professionalism for an interview, seduction and attraction for a hot date, or even just calm and collected if you're heading into a difficult conversation. The options are endless, and so are the methods, really. You can recite a spell and that wand that you made with the kids, or inscribe a rune or a sigil into your blusher or your face powder, or just draw it on the back if you don't want to damage anything. You can pass your jewellery through incense smoke while imbuing it with intention, or simply write words on your mirror in eyeliner pencil. It can be as simple as you want it to be. And when it comes to any kind of spell in this episode, I am deliberately keeping suggestions broad and non-prescriptive for a few reasons. The main one being that this episode is already too long and it would be hours long if I went into all the detail that I wanted to. And to be honest, it's been really hard to rein in all my interests. I have been reading witchy books since I was 18 and I could fill a whole podcast series with this stuff, but this is just a Halloween special. And as I've said, it's a bit different to my other episodes and it is just meant to be a one-off. So I've had to be really disciplined and I keep having to cut bits out because I'm getting carried away. Secondly, you can find whatever you're looking for in hundreds of books, YouTube videos, and podcasts. And there's so much out there that you can tailor your research to the particular area that interests you. Thirdly, and most importantly, your innate natural magic is yours and it is unique, and you are the best judge of how to tap into it and use it in a way that suits you. If you're curious and you want to learn more, here are some search words that I haven't already mentioned. Ley lines, spirit animals, nature spirits, dryads, the Kaliak, third eye, grimoire, as above, so below, green witch, kitchen witch, hearth witch, house witch, garden witch, sea witch, hearthcraft, fairy magic, Gerald Gardner, Aleister Crowley, chaos magic, sigils, runes, maiden, mother and crone, the Oak King and the Holly King, lunar magic, witchlings, book of shadows and cunning folk. I am going to leave it there because that list could go on and on. If you would like some specific recommendations, there is a brilliant podcast made by the BBC on Radio 4, and I found it on Apple Podcasts, so I'm sure you could find it on like every podcast streaming service, and it's called Witch. It's made by India Rackerson, and I loved it. It's a thorough introduction to witchcraft, designed for everyone, but especially those not well-versed in the subject. It covers the witch trials, modern practitioners, misconceptions and prejudice, but it's also fascinating and goes deeper into the repression of women and how this ties into the history of witchcraft. One detail that really stood out for me, and forgive me, I am really paraphrasing here, was that so many women accused of witchcraft were healers, herbalists and midwives, wise women and elders that were sought after for their wisdom and the knowledge passed down through generations. But the bit that got me was how the repression of these women tied in with the rise of modern medicine and the physicians, educated, middle-class white men who charged for their services and prescribed medicines from apothecaries, and how at odds these physicians were with the healers. Uneducated women, working class, many of whom would not expect a financial transaction, and the competition for patients and their trust. So just looking at that with a modern lens and thinking about how much knowledge we have lost through the generations and how dependent we are on doctors, on pharmacies, and how big the pharmaceutical industry is now in terms of profit and dominance, that got me thinking about how our go-to reaction now for minor complaints is just always the pharmacy and to see a doctor, and how much knowledge have we lost through the generations when this wasn't an option, when this just wasn't the normal day to day. And so much of this links to fear. I'm getting really deep here, sorry, but I was just thinking that my mum would look at me as if I'm mad if I went out and picked raspberry leaves from the plant in my garden to brew up as a tea for menstrual cramps instead of getting some painkillers out of the drawer. As I was listening, I just found it a really evocative, thought-provoking podcast. Plus, the presenter has such a sweet and soothing voice. It's, although it can get quite deep, it's a really feel-good podcast. And her stance as someone who is not a witch, but open-minded, makes it feel so objective and accessible. I think my favourite line in it is how, in a spell, Eye of Newt is in fact referring to mustard seeds because they're tiny and black and they look like newt's eyes. This is what I do in my spare time, people. I take notes about spell ingredients. And another side note here, in practical magic, they say nigella seeds are the same as blessing seeds. Oh, I've gone completely off track again. Right, come on, Sam, rein it in. What was I saying? Recommendations. If you want to read about witchcraft but overwhelmed by the choice, then look up an author called Doreen Valiente. She is like the mother of modern witchcraft and an important figure in Wicca. Her history is fascinating. Unfortunately, she died in 1999. I mean, she was in her 70s, but it's worth reading anything you can get your hands on. Her writing is articulate and to the point, but still has a beautiful storytelling feel to it. She's clearly so knowledgeable and yet doesn't overwhelm with too much detail. And although everything she says feels like everyday common sense, it still feels exciting. Like something hidden is being revealed. Her books are accessible to everyone and still feels inclusive in a way that's like being let into a long buried secret. As you can tell, I'm a fan. If you're interested in the divine feminine and how we can honour her in different forms and integrate that connection into our everyday lives, then I recommend Book of Shadows by Phyllis Curott. There's some fascinating history and storytelling about how the goddess figure has lost her footing, both in our collective memories and the evolution of civilization, and how we've lost women's rights along with this goddess, as patriarchal religions and political systems have come to dominate our world. If you're looking for a gentle introduction to working some magic into the mundane, then Spell in the Wild by Alice Tarbuck is great and a balm for anyone struggling with depression. Witchcraft into the Wilds by Rachel Patterson is funny, to the point and down to earth, and inspired a lot of suggestions in this book. I also recommend all of the books by Aaron Murphy Hiscock. They are lovely. As I've got so many books on the subject, I found it really difficult to just pull a few out, and I can't name them all without boring you to death. So I will just do some little videos on Instagram so you can see some more of the titles, and I'll leave a short reading list in the show notes below. Be warned, there are a lot of spell books out there, and they can call for the most ridiculous ingredients. I have one book that, to be perfectly honest with you, I bought purely for the illustrations because they're just gorgeous and they get me in a really witchy mood. And I have laughed out loud when reading this book. I mean, one spell called for water from a sacred spring. How many of us have access to a sacred spring? You could bankrupt yourself buying every ingredient listed in a library of books because you can get anything on the internet. And so I recommend using whatever is local and abundant near you. And if you're looking for herbal equivalents and alternatives, then Scott Cunningham's Encyclopedia of Magical Herbs is very detailed. It's quite expensive to buy, so I tend to order a copy from the library, and then I just take as many notes as I can because it seems to be in such high demand that I can't keep my hands on it and I don't get to renew it. I have to take it back. But I recommend the book. When it comes to finding witchy books, the internet is obviously a marvel. But if you happen to be in London, visit a bookshop called Treadwell's. It's near the British Museum. It's tiny, it's fascinating. The people are lovely, not at all scary. Even I was nervous going into an occult bookshop. And the best part is they hold workshops and meetings downstairs in a little room full of like-minded people drinking tea and munching on biscuits. I discovered Treadwell's when I was working nearby and I was so happy to find it. And then COVID happened. I lost the job, the city shut down, and then I moved away. So I mourn the loss, but they do a lot of stuff online via Zoom. And of course you can buy their books and witchy tools from their website. But if you can get there in person, I recommend it. There are so many witchy YouTubers. If you're into the herbalism aspect and lean towards a kind of cottagecore feel, then Annabelle Margaret's channel, The Green Witch, is great. And if you're looking for a darker, more kind of witchy, Halloween-like aesthetic, then The Witch of Wanderlust has playlists where it's easy to find videos on particular topics like enchanting jewellery, sigil magic, and book recommendations. She does a lot of those. Although I think my favourite witchy YouTuber, just as an all-round pick-me-up, is Bex on the Witch's Cookery YouTube channel. Her sense of humour and down-to-earth approach always puts a smile on my face, and this sounds a bit bizarre, but I watch her videos while giving my son his bedtime bottle because her videos are just colourful, they're inspiring, they're funny, they're family friendly, and my son just happily drifts off to sleep in my arms while I'm watching. Once you start looking for resources, you will find there are countless options out there. And these are great as a reference point. But any ritual that you develop or spell that you cast will always be more potent if you created it yourself. It's your magic. And so the more input you have in the wording, the choice of ingredients, the timing, the more likely it is to work. You might also be surprised if you find a lack of very specific, this is what I do and how I do it type of content. Now there is a lot out there, but I'm talking about the authentic kind as opposed to the theatrical kind. Because magic is a very personal thing. And also, that's the reason why I haven't gone into detail about any of my own spells. Because the fact of the matter is, when you talk about it, it takes some of the magic out of it. Have you ever found that you've had an inspiration to do something that feels shiny and exciting, but when you've talked it over with others, it's taken just some of the sparkle away from it? Or you find after talking about goals that you have, you're less likely to go through with them. Discussing things can be great, but depending on the person you're speaking to and their opinions, even when they're well meant, it can sow seeds of doubt and cause you to question yourself or your motivations or how realistic or plausible something is. And all of these things can just kind of shake off the magic. It's the same with a spell. The magic comes from what you're doing, your intent, and most importantly, your unwavering belief that it is going to work. You may not be sure about how the magic will work, you just know it will. And keeping it a secret protects that magic while it does its work. This is why most people will keep a notebook, commonly known as a book of shadows, so they can record how they did something, what they used, and when, and how it turned out. It's personal, private, and a helpful reminder when you want to do something similar. This can be as elaborate as a leather-bound tome, like the spellbook in Charmed. Yes, of course, this was my favourite show growing up. Or just as simple and discreet as a boring-looking notebook hiding in plain sight. Mine is the latter. Although, at some point, I will do an Instagram video of my herbal notebook, which is of the elaborate embossed leather-bound variety and aged paper, and it's beautiful, and it was a gift from my husband, it's like best present ever, and it's full of notes and illustrations on herbs and their magical and medicinal uses. It's not for any purpose other than my own satisfaction. And again, like, this is what I get up to in my spare time. Most people go to the cinema. Or they just binge watch stuff on Netflix and eat popcorn, and I'm plucking herbs from the garden and drawing them and cutting them out, sticking them in an old book and researching like deities and planets that correspond with the herb. I mean, I do question myself sometimes. And actually, now that I come to think about it, my listeners now know more about me from a witchy point of view than my friends and my family do. I am sure a therapist would have a field day with that one. Oh well, like I said, I like to keep the podcast authentic. So, by this point, this episode is probably far too long, and I could talk on this subject for a year and a day. So I will conclude this witchy special with a quote from the ending of my favourite witchy film. There are some things that I know for certain. Always throw spilt salt over your left shoulder. Keep rosemary by your garden gate, plant lavender for luck, and fall in love whenever you can. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again for the next episode of Rooted by Nature.